For more information about this episode, I would check out the value retention plan, either version, base or explicit. Those two versions talk about looking at human value and finding value in people. And that's what my guest talks about, finding value in people. All right, this is just the introduction. The main part of the episode is about to begin now. Hey, my name is Larry Hyde. This is episode 191 of the podcast, White, Confused, Black, and Christian. My guest is James Possible. I came across him on LinkedIn when I read his bio, and I looked at his picture, and then I read his bio again, looked at his picture again, and I said, I gotta see what he's talking about. I gotta hear it. You gotta hear it. In fact, just to make sure I got the same, I'm looking at it again to make sure I got the same guy. I got the right guy, James Possible. I'll let you take it away and do your thing.
Well, I mean, you tell me. Where do you want me to start? I don't. Because you say you're looking at my bio.
Okay, so here's the deal. Here's the deal. I just put it straight. It says Black Wealth Matters, Black Wealth Strategists, Wealth and Finance Education, things of that nature. And then I saw a white gentleman in the picture. And I said, maybe LinkedIn did something different that I don't know about because I'm not too technical. Maybe they... a different James Possible, but then I read more of your bio and you're actually serious about what you actually go into depth as to your bio. You do it, James. You do your thing, James, because I...
Okay, yeah. It's an interesting thing. It's only recently that I've really started to get some of that response. And you know, it's as you grow and develop, more and more people know about you. Of course, you're going to get that. It's like, oh, what the hell? A white guy? Why is he doing this? Why does he care? You know, this doesn't impact him. And the reality is, it really does. If I care about people, and I do, then how does this not involve me? You know, there's the saying that be the change. It's not about looking somewhere else for the change to happen. It's choosing to be the change. And this, you know, I have so many strikes against me. One, I'm older, I'm white, and I'm a man. So, yeah, exactly, right? Three. I should be down for the count. But I've never been married to this, to the white dogma, if you will. I've never fully subscribed to it. But I can't say, because I grew up largely in a white community. I had my neighbors across the street, they were black. In fact, there were two. One moved away, but the one I grew up with, you know, we were best friends, Sandy and I, and he actually came. They actually moved from Oakland. So, you know, the odd thing was I never really thought about it. You know, I don't know if it's odd or not, but I never really thought about it because I guess it was my world, right? It was white, so there wasn't really much for me to think about. And throughout school, there were only a handful of black students. And it wasn't until Sandy went to college and pledged Alpha, that FIA, for those who don't know, that I actually began to see some perspective, because then I went to a few of his fraternity parties, and it was flipped. You know, I was the odd person out, skin color wise, and it was interesting. I think I didn't really go deep with it. I was still young, so it was just simply a perspective. It was like, oh, so this is what it looks like for him, except he's seeing all white. And But we, him and I, never really talked about it. And, you know, we went to, we traveled to San Francisco together, the BART train together. So we, you know, we went everywhere together, and never. So race was never seriously an issue, you know, in my youth. And I kind of question that. I kind of wonder, you know, maybe it should have been. But the thing is, you know, I was an athlete. I ran track and I was a sprinter, a jumper and a hurdler. I actually did some training in Oakland. And there was a coach in Oakland that I would go and he would work with me on the hurdles. But, you know, even in Oakland, I never really felt out of place. You know, I'd get a few comments every now and then from maybe an older black man. I remember one, how did he say? He said, "You don't understand Otis Redding." I was like, okay. So, you know, it was kind of funny. But I got what he was saying, right? I don't get what his life is. And I get that. And, but it never really went past that, much deeper than that, because I've never really felt threatened or anything like that. Much of the conversation that you hear, you're reading stuff. But I think the tipping point for me, and it probably should have never been the tipping point, but it was. It was George Floyd.
Oh, okay.
And I began to process a lot of stuff that I hadn't processed before. See, because I moved to Oklahoma, and the odd thing was that it was even wider where I moved, right? So it was like, okay, so now I'm in a bubble, and for a couple decades, not a whole lot of interaction with the black community, which I grew up with. So kind of an awkwardness grew with me because I wasn't around it all the time, right? So I didn't have the common interaction, and and I really didn't realize it until all this stuff started to happen. But I think right before that was white privilege came out, the idea. Well, for me, it's been around, but the first time I heard white privilege, I was like, holy shit. I understood immediately what it was, right? I wasn't offended, because I totally got it. I was like, wow. Now, I didn't get it from a systemic perspective. I do now. But it was like, wow, I am absolutely privileged because of my whiteness. I get to do things.
Can I ask you a quick question on that point? Real quick.
Yeah.
Some people get that. I've heard some other white people had the same revelation, and some have introduced a thing called white guilt. You don't seem to have white guilt because, like I said, you understand the difference that it wasn't you. But so there was no white guilt in your situation whatsoever because you knew it wasn't you. And
yeah. I mean, I don't understand the idea of white guilt, except that speaks to maybe the individual and how they've approached life, right? Because I've never maliciously done anything that was like skin color driven, right? I just haven't. Now, I can't say that I've never said anything racist or not behaved racist, because as I understand more and more of the system that I grew up in, it's inevitable that I'm going to say something or behave in a racist manner, right? Even unconsciously, it's just going to happen. And just because I don't know what I don't know, right? And the learning curve has been huge. And shocking and awakening, and which brings me to the term being woke. I don't think any white person can ever use the term woke. I am woke. I think the only way a white person can use the term woke is with privilege. Again, because they're white, they feel privileged. They have that privilege to actually say, I'm woke. But in truth, I think the only person that really objectively could say that about a white individual would have to be, a black person or somebody of color, right? Black, brown person, as I say, people of color or indigenous. And you have the whole spectrum. But I really focus on the black community because when we look at this history, my first eye-opener was probably about 15 years ago, and that's when I first learned about Black Wall Street.
Oh yeah.
And I've always been about money, really been interested in money and wealth. In fact, stocks is what got me into technology when I was much younger. That's why I bought my first computer, actually. Now, when I saw the term, the phrase, Black Wall Street, I'm not sure how I found it or saw it, but I think it was just a browsing thing. And it hit me, I was like, well, what the heck is that? And I was like, wow, that sounds really, really interesting. And so I dug into it, and only to find out that, it was really, really an amazing story, but it was a story with just a horrific ending, right? And a massacre, and a white massacre. I mean, they massacred the community. I don't know how many survivors there were, but there were very few. The estimates are definitely, I think, up to 300 people. And we're talking about black people. And a community that was self-sufficient. And I actually like to say that in all my readings and my studies, let me turn on my phone for a moment. The Black Wall Street strikes me as the purest form of capitalism that I've ever come across. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because today we don't really live in a society that is a capitalist society. And there's a lot of people out there throwing around terms like socialist and liberals and this kind of thing, and they're not really actually even understanding the environment that we have monetarily right now, because if they did, they would understand that we are actually focused operating in a socialist way right now, except all the money, all this money that's being printed, like the, we go back to the stimulus package, these trillions of dollars, not even 1% of that money went to the people. Now, think about that, Larry. Not even 1% went to the people, and yet they're concerned that people are going to take advantage of a check, one check. You get what I'm saying? It's just like, what am I missing here? But yet they push trillions of dollars into these businesses. And as we've learned over time, many of these businesses didn't even need this money. But who's paying the bill for that? You and I. The taxes. The weight of those trillions of dollars falls back on the people, not on the receivers of that money, the benefactors of that money. And there's something horribly wrong with that flow. And so with this this whole thing, Black Wealth Matters, which, I'll flip my screen here real quick, just so people understand. Let me see here. I think that's probably, yeah. But I had one with the slogan that I like much better. No, no. Let me poke around. There we go. Yeah. Because that's really what wealth is right there.
Oh, yeah.
So with wealth comes power. With power comes freedom. And we're in the system that we're taught. We're not taught. We're indoctrinated into a system. It's like racism, right? It's a systemic thing. And people don't get what that means. Well, systemic means that from birth, and this is for every American, this isn't just specific to white people. This is any American that's born here and then grows up in the system, and even somebody who moves here and becomes a part of our system, and they grow up through our system. Throughout the system, we're being taught that white is more important than black. And there's so many subtle ways that we're infected with this idea, this notion, from behavior to little anecdotes, and it just, it's incessant. It just doesn't stop. And so this is why I say the woke thing, right? I can become aware of myself, but what I can never understand is your perspective fully. I can't. Now, there's going to be times that I do come to terms with certain aspects of it, because I'm human, right? We're all human, and there are feelings and experiences that are very common. Yet, at the end of the day, I'm not black. I'm not black. So I don't carry the stress that a black person carries 24/7. I don't carry the stress as much, as sick as it made me to watch George Floyd, that 8 minutes and 40 seconds, right? As much as that affected me, I can only imagine that it would have affected me so much greater if I was a black man, right?
Yeah.
Or a mom, a black mom, right? And I know my wife couldn't even watch it. And so it's like, okay, this is horribly wrong where we are. And I'm just as confused about history and everything too, because I was taught this history that's really white. It's not black. And the reality is that black history is white history. And until we embrace that, until we get that in our head, this isn't an either or discussion, right?
Everything.
Yeah, it's like, so there have been inventions where they were, the black inventors created it, right? And their advancements in all aspects of life, and they impact us. And to suggest that that's not part of our history, even though we're benefiting from those inventions and those advancements, it's just like, wow, how can that be possible? It just doesn't make sense to me. And so we get into the financial disparity, and that's where it really gets ugly. And it's because, depending on the studies that you read, it's anywhere from the white population, the general white population, families have 8 to 13 times more wealth on average than the typical black family. And how is that acceptable? Right. How is that okay? How can we how can any American say that's a good thing?
Well, like you said earlier, though, it's a matter of a comfort zone. I think a lot of white people see that, it's like you see it, but they would rather be, maybe it's more comfortable to say, well, it kind of is, you know, like I said, that's what white privilege stuff saying. It's uncomfortable, but guess what? It's us versus them, it's white versus black. So as long as my team is winning, I'm not going to say shit. And that's why I had to tell people, because you actually, I can tell by your biography that you actually you don't see it as us versus them or black versus white anymore. I mean, you know that you realize it exists, but you're willing to say, hey, I'm willing to step up for the quote unquote losing team if it means we create a level playing field where everybody can have wealth, like you say, wealth, power, and freedom. So,
well, okay, let me take it really deep. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so I'm going to take it really deep. Let's talk about integration. Okay. And let's really break that down. And there's going to be white people that get absolutely upset about this. And you know, I imagine there might even be some black people that have a struggle with this as well. But the question is, and I'm getting ready to write an article about this, did integration serve the black community, or did it serve, which community did it serve better? The black community or the white community?
I'm gonna have to wait and read the article before I say my response. Well, actually, you know what?
Okay.
I'll tell you this.
I mean, just off the top, what would be your first thought?
Off the top, I would think it would help black, because that's what the whole goal was, to put help black people get become integrated society.
Yes, right? That's what you would think. But let's take it down to the most basic model, or the most basic example, okay? And let's talk about the Negro Baseball League. So, they had a following. They had great athletes. There was black wealth in that community. Now, arguably, we could say it wasn't significant wealth, but the thing is, there was real wealth. There was income being created, right? And there were from a business perspective, there was actually some, and it was black ownership. You follow what I'm saying?
Ooh, so, I see where you're going.
So
right now,
it was a.
I see where you're going. Keep
so
going.
So it was a. It was truly a benefit to the black community. Even though from the black community's perspective, for some, it may have been they're looking at this small Negro League and they're thinking, well, shit, look at the major league. But you know, look at the white league, look at all they have. We don't have that. We want some of that. Well, so what did they do? I can't think of the first baseball player right now, I just went blank. Jackie Robinson, there it is, yeah. So they get him, they bring him into the white league, and because he was definitely one of the best, right? And so what happens after they start this migration of black athletes to the white leagues? The Negro League collapses. So all that black ownership, all that black responsibility, all that black culture that was being impacted by that black community that had a flow of money. And I'm not talking about whether it was great or not. The point is, there was a flow of money that they had control of. Once it all moved to the white leagues, they lost that control. What happened to now? The black community would go to the white games and they would pay for white tickets. They would support the white leagues. All of the concession stands, probably most of them are white. You get what I'm saying? So all of this money, suddenly, who's the benefactor? Well, the white league is. So now suddenly, whatever was happening here in the Negro League is suddenly gone. And so it's hard to, we got to be careful how we measure things, because I really feel like there's this want and this need to measure. And it may be that we're taught this, right? Because of this system, the systemic racism. I don't know, but when we measure the success of blackness by whiteness, we are doing blackness a disservice.
Excellent.
We're not giving credit where it's due. The black community should never be measured in terms of the white community, because the white community has its, the white elite have it set up, the white superiority, the system of white superiority and racism, they've got it set up already. It doesn't matter how you compare yourself with them. They've got it set up where you're always going to look less than. Mm-hmm. And so that comparison will never benefit the black community. It's like the conversation of and I love it on one level, but on another level, I question how much it does for the black community when we say this was the first black man too, this was the first black woman too. But the thing is, for us to say that, we're saying that in terms of the white community. Do you follow what I'm saying?
And I can see, I like the way you said it before you started talking about it, is a lot of black people and white people are probably mad, because like you said, right now, there are pictures on LinkedIn, as you know, where you've got, I'm the first black congressman or whatever it is, or I'm the first black such. And even as a black person, I'm sitting looking at like, that's cool, but there's something, as a black person, I'm like, it's cool, but there's something still that's not right. But we have to actually celebrate the fact that, yes, I made it into the, you know, the white world or whatever. It's like, nah, that shit doesn't sit right. So,
And that's my point.
But how do you transfer that, knowing that the white wealth that when blacks were integrated into the white system, that whites basically just sucked all the good stuff out of it and left the black system to dry? How do you transfer, knowing that about wealth and the transfer of wealth, things of that nature, how does this black wealth matters come into play? How does what you do come into play?
Okay, well, let's talk about what we know. Historically, we know to be true, right? Okay. America was built on what? On the backs of black African slaves. Right?
Yep.
That's how anybody could ever debate that would be beyond me, right? You can't debate it. It's a real thing. And then we start moving forward into, but at every point in our history, there has been either a black community or a black individual who have managed to lift themselves above the average and build wealth and become a notable community or a notable figure. And I can't think of the one black woman right now, but she was extraordinarily successful. But at the time, because of the way the laws were written, the white laws were written, she actually had to put her assets in the name of a white man. And so ultimately, the fortunes that she created, not him,
right,
that she created, were actually taken from her.
Can I ask a real quick while you said it?
Right, yeah, there? Go ahead, absolutely.
So that point right there, I'm not sure what situation you're talking about, but a lot of times it's been passed down generationally, because I know my big brother, I'm 50, he's probably about 60 something. When he was growing up, it was different for him, because he taught me, hey, better get you some white boys to work in the house, because you want to look like, you know, you're being professional. You know, you get white people to work in your house and to build a house for you, or you start your business, you go to this white boy lawyer, get you a white boy on your team. You have a white boy to make it look legit, or whatever it is. And just like what you're saying right there, you know, black people in my brother's generation were trying to find a white boy, put houses in his name, and find a white boy that's a cool banker or a real estate agent and do stuff through them. And like you said, that link was missing between like example about the Black Baseball Ball League versus the other one, that initiative, that drive to get your own shit, and Black just do it yourself, was missing it. And a lot of it was passed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, so absolutely. So that's such a great discussion right there. Which you and I both know, that should not have to be a conversation.
Right.
And so we go down, we continue down through history, and at every point where there was any kind of noticeable or notable wealth created and established by a black community or a black figure, it was taken from them by the white community. And many times through killing and looting. And it's like, so what we know, my point there is, the truth is, you can't, the black community has repeatedly proven itself that they are more than capable. And see, I don't even like saying it like that, but I feel like I have to on some level, because there's this narrative that they aren't capable. And see, I'm saying they, and it's just like that the black community isn't capable. And we know that's BS, that's not right. They're no different than me. In fact, I would go this far. I'm really gonna throw this out there. Some people really won't like this. But I really think if we had just, like today, just drew the line and said, okay, let's compete on equal levels, right? Whatever skill set you bring to the table, whatever qualifications, certifications, degrees, whatever you bring to the table, let's compete one-on-one, right? Let's drop color, let's just get in there, mix it up, and compete for the positions.
Uh-oh, don't say it, James.
Yeah. So here's what I think would happen. I think, really, I feel initially, a lot of people would have, as my son might say, they'd be butthurt. Because with privilege comes a certain amount of ease, a certain amount of, you don't have to work. And every black person in my life that I know of has worked their ass off. I know women with multiple degrees, multiple certifications, men as well. And it's just like, so you can't tell me if you've been enjoying privilege, that you're suddenly going to be ready to compete on a level playing field. But I think in the long run, it would actually benefit America. Because suddenly America would be about excellence instead of privilege.
That's true capitalism right there. That's true capitalism right there.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So privilege is concerned about holding on to, and they don't want to lose, in this case, the money, the and really the influence and the power. Because when we're talking about the elite, they have the money, they have the wealth, but they've gone the next step, and now they have influence, and they have this power of influence. And so that's what they're concerned with. That's why they dominate the media agendas and, you know, these bigger players in our society, right? So, but I would like to see that happen, because it would be a wake-up call for America, but it would be a good wake-up call, because I don't think other countries could compete toe-to-toe with us if we actually turn America into I guess a meritocracy, where we actually competed on the base of our merits.
How can we do that? How do you
not
think
privilege?
What would be we already dominate the world as is, but you know, like you said, we throw that element in there and we're just unstoppable. So now the question is, where would be a good pilot program, but because we've seen this stuff in sports, when it comes to sports already. We've seen that.
But on the sports, Larry, though, let's be real about it. Like, it's, I've seen what I feel like some black leaders say it they talk about sports incorrectly, because the reality of sports, we have these athletes who find their families, they say, this is your way out. This is the way out of this system of oppression, right? Sports. So naturally, a driven family like that's going to have far more incentive to push all the way through, right? A privileged white person, even if they are athletic, is not going to have I think if you went down the numbers, fewer of them would have that same drive or incentive to actually push all the way through the pros.
They have more options. They know there's other options available easily.
Yes. Yeah. So they could get halfway down the course of their career and say, I think I'll go this direction.
Right.
But, I don't think that happens with the black athlete. It's really coming, like, let's say, from Compton or something like that, right? From a situation like that, where they really are trying to raise their family, improve the situation of their family, and that stuff. But they get to the pros, they get these multi-million dollar contracts. What do they learn on top of that? They don't. They pimp them for the game.
Yeah.
And they become iconic players. But when they retire, what happens to them? On the average, NFL players, within 2 years, on average, they're broke. Mm. And it happens, it's a little bit slower in the National Basketball League, right, the NBA. So it's usually about 4 years before you start to see this kind of breakdown, the loss of wealth that they achieve. So, yes, they're getting the opportunity, but they've earned that opportunity. It's a lifetime opportunity. They did the work, they earned it, right? So we can't take that away from them. However, we're not taking time to
groom them.
To groom them, yes. Like, there should be a system in place that says, look, you're coming from this, you're not accustomed to having $1 million sitting in your bank account. And there are things that you need to understand about money. Like, these are the battles that you're going to face immediately when you become, it's like a lottery winner, right? So many lottery winners, same thing. A couple years down the road, they lose it all. In fact, they end up being bankrupt. So it's that same kind of thing. We are not educated in money. We are not educated in wealth. And that's true of both black and white. The thing is, the white community has a privilege. So they do have access to certain channels that are not as easily accessed by the black community. So we know that's true. So they don't really always have to know everything, because just by privilege, they're going to bump into it and they're going to have some advancement. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So, yeah. So this is why, this is why I think this matters, because financial education matters. But I think we even get some of that wrong, because we don't talk about the cycle of debt. Because it's very, very real, and it's used against us, not just against the black community, but the white community as well, because they really don't want us to be out of debt. Correct. They want to keep us in a cycle of debt. So they want our credit cards to be maxed, they want us to have a mortgage, and they want us to have a car loan constantly. Because why? Well, because that's how business makes money.
Right.
But that's not how you and I can build wealth.
So how do you, with startslaying.com, how do you use your tell me more about your program, how you are doing what you can.
Right. So the first thing is, and I'm not the first to know it, to say it, and I know that Black Wealth Matters. It started out with Black Lives Matters. I was listening to that, and I think about money and wealth, and somehow it just connected to me. I wrote it down. I said, Black Wealth Matters. I'm like, that's it. It's Black Wealth. So are we going to change the system? I think that's a key a key question to ask ourselves. Can we actually change the system that creates the racism? I don't think we can. Because it's a systemic thing. Like, I don't think we can change it without having a rewrite of constitutional law.
So is that where your focus is more?
I'm just taking you to where I'm going, okay?
Okay.
So fundamentally that's where I'm at, okay? Okay. So if that's true, then where's the power? Where does the power exist? Well, the power exists in wealth. And if you understand why the central banks was established, which is the Federal Reserve, part of that was to circumvent or to get around the past habits of people of running on the bank. In other words, if politicians did something that people didn't like, there would be a run on the bank. They would want their money because they wouldn't trust the government. If the banks were doing something wrong, guess what? The community would go to the banks, they would want their money. There would be a run on the banks, right? So in came the Federal Reserve. And so now it doesn't matter if there is a run on the bank or whatever, the Federal Reserve is going to always, it's always going to bail out the government.
Yeah.
So now they've usurped the one source of power that we had as people, and that's our wealth. And so then they moved us into a habit of debt. So for all intents and purposes, we're not a nation of wealth. We're a nation of debt. And as a result, most people don't even have access. The vast majority of families that can't even get to $400 or $500 for an emergency without borrowing money. There's something really wrong with that. And as long as we don't have any kind of financial influence on the system, then we have very little say, because there's no way for us to hold the system accountable if we don't have any financial wherewithal.
Like, you know, the name of my podcast is White, Confused, Black, and Christian. So through my life cycle, yeah, I found my best advances when I had developed a personal relationship with Yahweh or God, Jehovah, whatever you want to call it, with that being. And at what point, this may be a little off track, but I believe at some point, we have to go into a detail right now, but I'm just going to throw this out there. At some point, you have to say, we don't have to, but at some point I finally said, like, dude, there's so much systematic stuff, we either got to try to change all the rules and do all this stuff, or maybe tap into the spiritual aspect of this life and this system, and maybe that can provide us with some, not an easy solution, but with a solution that can be more attainable. Everybody organically getting a sense of spirituality on their own potential. Like I said, I don't know, that's just me, that's been working for me. I'm just throwing it out there, because when I kept myself locked into it's black versus white and rich versus poor, I was like, I'm at a loss. I'll never be able to get there. When I tied that spiritual element into it, that's when I was like, you know what? There's something else here besides just these people controlling the money here. There's something else there. And that's what gives me faith in this whole system, that we can actually use our spirit, this thing that's out there that we don't tap into to make a change. But yeah, outside of that, I'm with you 100% when it comes to the legal aspect. You gotta change the laws. There's a whole lot of law changing that has to be done.
In the system.
People
have different conversations about spiritual and the soul and that kind of thing. I absolutely, if that's what works for you, what I heard was once you took your mind off of this systemic stuff, then things changed. And I get that. But it's like, I have the thought, I mean, I started this whole thing with be the change, right? That was the conversation, be the change. And so I'm constantly asking myself, where can I do the most? And this is where I feel like I can do the most. Now, I'm not saying that I know what it is to be Black. I'm not saying I can do more than somebody else who's Black. I'm just saying that this is where I feel at home. This is, it makes sense for me. And so this is where I choose to make a difference. That's all. That's nothing more than that. Do what?
It's your wheelhouse. You're functioning. You're making a change in your wheelhouse. So
yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah. It yeah. I just, and not that I wouldn't, not that I don't work with white people. Yes, I do. But it, my passion and my connection is not there. You know that this is the change I care about, is in the Black community. And so if at some level, if I can plant the seeds of change through understanding of wealth, then I want to be that.
Well, do this. Do me a favor and tell the listeners, or I always kind of joke, I don't really know the listeners, probably just me and my sister and my, you know, well, my kids maybe. But let's tell whoever is listening now or in the future, how they can get a hold of you, even a website or something like that, or what it is, how they can tap into what your Black Wealth Matters agenda or platform is. How can they get a hold of you?
Well, so the URL you see, that goes to the Facebook group, which is, you go to www.startslaying.com. So that's S-T-A-R-T, slaying, S-L-Y-A-Y-I-N-G.com. And that'll take you right to the Facebook group. You just sign up there, and then you'll have a chance to interact with me. I'm also on LinkedIn. My social handle is my Radical Wealth. So the URL is, you know, like Twitter, My Radical Wealth, YouTube, My Radical Wealth, Instagram, My Radical Wealth. So that's my social handle.
Gotta tell you, I have done some interviews, and I have, like I said, I don't like to go into it knowing too much, and then usually I get pleasantly surprised. This one here, I was more than pleasantly surprised, because I was like, shit, if I didn't know it was you, if I wasn't looking at you, I would be like, you know what, this is how professional and people that are, and Black people from generation before me, that's how they talk. They talk exactly how you talk, and that focuses, and that's what helped me put that link out there, that it's, you talked about it too, and humans is a common link between humans, and whether you're white or Black, you're focusing on that common link of, hey, let's just be on the same playing field. Let's just do this. Got the bullshit.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that, right? Because it's odd for me when I hear somebody that is white talk about the Black community in a way that they feel like they feel threatened or stuff like that. But you know what? I've never been more welcomed than I have within my Black circles, my circle of Black friends. And I mean, I've never always welcome. It's never a discussion of either or. And there are some leaders out there, and I absolutely understand it, Larry, that they are. It's like, no, this, it has to be Black, because that's what matters. And I get it, because when you look at history in the eye, you can see what has happened.
Yeah, and you get white guy involved, it. And it all goes to shit, basically. It's something tricky happens.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and that's okay. It I don't expect everyone to say yes or to agree or to accept. I just know over time that my truth will shine, and I'm not leaving this conversation. That's the bottom line. I'm not leaving the conversation because it's a conversation that matters, and it has to be had. And if the white community is the only community that could really end systemic racism, well, then at some point, white people are going to have to start stepping up.
Exactly.
And that's just the truth, right? Because it's just the truth. I have to own it that I'm white, so I am part of this system. So I have to make it, I have to choose where I want to be in this conversation. And I'm choosing to stand in the conversation of Black wealth matters, because it does matter. And until Black wealth is on this equal playing field, there's not going to be sufficient influence and power within the Black community, because it is wealth that ultimately leads to power and influence. And so if we can't actually change the system, then we have to have enough financial wherewithal, enough wealth, that we can actually use it to push, to lean on situations where there's some influence.
Right.
Like at present, it's all about voting. Well, we got to get past that, because voting's not enough. We have to have some real consequence from that voting, right? So we have this huge Black push to remove 45, and so he's gone, okay? And so now here we are, we have Biden and Harris, but there's a Black mandate just by virtue of the vote, and we have to really honor that. And so they have to be held accountable. And that's why the Georgia vote is so important. So in order to hold them accountable, Georgia, we absolutely have to win the runoffs, because then that takes the power away from McConnell, and it gives the power back to Biden and Harris. And now we can legitimately hold them accountable for what happens moving forward in the next 4 years, right? So, so the vote's a start, but the wealth, we got to start establishing wealth, and it just has to happen.
Right. Well,
it's been taken from us. It's been taken from the Black community repeatedly, and we just got to get to a place where we got to put it back. And yes, some of that has to do with Black business. And the more I watch, the more I observe, the more I feel like it is about Black business on a lot of levels, because these white corporations are not interested, and they repeatedly prove it, they are not interested in growing Black executives.
Nah,
and in promoting and giving them real power, real influence.
Yeah.
Like they would rather them be there for looks than give them the actual authority. And
right.
That's not enough. The looks, or as somebody that I know says, the optics of it, that's not enough. This game, we have to change it now. We can't afford to go backwards now. We have to keep moving forward, and we need something substantial moving forward.
But again, the momentum is there. Like you said, the momentum is there with the voting. Now we got to keep building on that. We're definitely going to do an episode. I'm going to definitely schedule another with you, because I can talk to you from now straight to dinner. I like where you're going with this. So here's the deal. You keep slaying.
I will.
But check this information out, and like I said, I'll put some, when I put the episode up there, I have some more information so people can get a hold of you, and definitely put this conversation out, this episode out there. So, yes, Black wealth matters, wealth matters, power matters, freedom matters. You matter, my friend. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate it.
All right. As I said, don't forget, we'll do another one soon, though.
Oh, gladly. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know how I wrap it up. That's a wrap for episode 191 with James Possible. Episode 192 is next, and as usual, I have no fucking clue what it's going to be about. But when I know, I'll let you know. All right. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
All right, James.